Hi, everyone. I'm glad to be here to tell you more about the Common Experiment Synthesis Project and how we're building a common understanding of all of the different parts of the Common Experiment. Thank you very much for the invitation. So if you've been here for the last few talks, you will know that we have 21 experiments happening across the country in 17 different regions in 18 different sites. And there's a lot of amazing diversity in this experiment, and it represents a broad picture of options for sustainable intensification. So a couple years ago, we decided that it would probably be a good idea to unify the activities of the experiments, of all the different experiments nationwide, with this synthesis project. So the idea is to take these ideas that are happening at the experiments and the work that's happening locally and identify the rationale and dimensions of the common experiment as a single entity, and then use those ideas to inform network level research questions and products, as Mark mentioned, kind of further down in his list of outcomes of the common experiment. And then the idea also is that those questions and products, of course, will advance sustainable intensification of agriculture. That's the hope. And it's important to note that this project was built as a flexible framework that can adapt and change as the needs of agriculture adapt and change. So as the network changes with agriculture, the experiments will change, but we've built a framework that can evolve with agriculture. And the core of this project has really been a grassroots effort, we've been able to do this grassroots approach where we take knowledge and ideas from existing in the network, because scientists at the 18 sites have given thoughtful responses to two questionnaires over the past 2 years. As Brandon mentioned, those two questionnaires were based on these ideas in our conceptual model that Brandon just explained. And so over the last couple of years, we've done a series of summary analyses and different ways to cut this data of all the responses to the questionnaire. But today I'm just going to focus on some of the highlights from the manuscript that we just submitted. And so that was submitted by all the authors of this questionnaire, or the respondents. So one major outcome of this project, as you'll see here in this brightly colored table, is a summary of the concerns about business as usual production. So the concerns that are really motivating our research of finding alternatives to business as usual. We've also illuminated four general strategies for sustainable intensification that can be recognized in most all of the aspirational treatments nationwide. We've cataloged the practices that are part of those strategies. And then also importantly, we've identified the barriers to adoption of those strategies and practices, because if the goal is widespread adoption of these aspirational systems, it's really important to understand what those barriers might be. And so a very important question in the questionnaires was, what are those concerns about business as usual? And as you might imagine, with all of the scientists across the country, we've got a lot of different ideas about those concerns in their localities, but we did also identify many common themes or commonalities among those concerns in the localities, in the regions. And so synthesizing those responses, we found three broad themes of concern. So there are costs of inputs, costs of specialization, concentration, and uniform land management, and vulnerability to accelerating environmental changes. So this is really what's motivating research nationwide to find alternatives. Another important element of this synthesis project has been documenting the practices that are happening in the aspirational treatments, and also those barriers to adoption. So this is an example of a response to one of the questions in which we asked all the scientists to name the three main practices in their aspirational treatments. That was easy for some, not so easy for others, because some wanted to talk about six or seven, but we had to cut it off. And so in this example, we see the Hornado, which Brandon just talked about, and then we have the Platte River experiment in their cropland system. And I just want to bring to your attention these barriers. So as we heard in the last talk, the lack of regional processing and marketing is a major barrier in our system for adoption of Criollo grass-fed beef production. But in the cropland system in the middle of the country, we have the concerns are more about existing infrastructure and needing to build new infrastructure for new approaches and costs of adopting these aspirational systems. So in order to compare, to better compare among all the experiments, we lumped these site-specific practices into generalized practice categories. So here's an example of practices submitted by six different experiments, and we lumped all of these into precision technologies. And so there was back and forth about these lumping, about these categories, but I think we came to something resembling consensus. And so we used NRCS practice standards for this lumping, and then also literature from the sites, and then just a lot of conversations with the collaborators and the participants in the project. So after that lumping exercise, we came up with 15 different generalized practice categories that are under investigation over the entire experiment. And so there are 6 for crop production, 4 for livestock production, and 5 at what we consider the enterprise level. And so actually, an important point was made toward the end of writing up the manuscript is that the livestock production, as the common experiment stands now, is really cattle and beef, mostly beef cattle at that. So that's an interesting kind of state of affairs of the common experiment. And as Mark showed, and another important question was about these aspirational outcomes or the major goals that are motivating LTAR research locally. And so the idea is, if the idea is that you want, what do you hypothesize to be the outcome from widespread adoption of your aspirational system in your region was the essence of this question also. And so it was interesting to see that for all 21 experiments, maintaining and enhancing soil quality and health was expressed. So I think everybody could be happy. A lot of attendees here would be happy about that. And then looking at the color coding also of these aspirational outcomes, it was interesting to note that outcomes that are more societal or social in nature were invoked less frequently than those with economic and environmental outcomes. And as Brandon said, I think, and Pete mentioned, a lot of us are really come from backgrounds more focused on field-based ecology and probably thinking about economic realities of producers, but probably have more to learn about social interactions, social networks of producers. Okay, so moving on to in this table, so taking these generalized practices and those aspirational outcomes, taking those together, synthesizing them, we came up with 4 strategies for sustainable intensification. So the practices and outcomes really illuminated these 4 strategies that are at work across the experiment. And so if you can handle the orange here, so it's reducing reliance on inputs, diversifying management, building adaptive capacity, and managing agricultural landscapes for multiple ecosystem services. And as Pete said once, it's kind of like a recipe, like you take a little bit of that, and then you get sustainable intensification, but I don't know, that remains to be seen. But and you might see some holes in that list. You might want to see other things there, but this is a good overview and summary of what's happening now, so this can be also a platform for us to move forward and add some more strategies to our recipe book here. And then going back to these barriers, so this is a summary of the key barriers to adoption of each of these practice categories. And so these are just the top 6 barriers that were actually mentioned for 7 or more of these practice categories, and I can explain the methods more if you have questions at a later time. But so what was interesting about this was that for the crop-focused experiments, we saw that additional capital or labor was a major barrier to adoption for these across all the practices. But then looking at the livestock practices, it was more a question of available information and norms and lack of examples. And then we see a loose kind of trend here also with these enterprise level practices where it's more about the lack of regional processing and marketing, and then difficulty adapting your current system to these new aspirational systems. So those were some interesting trends illuminated by the project. So looking at those barriers all together and just summarizing here, there are three main ones of informational deficits, costs, and social norms. 2 minutes, really? Yeah, okay. Okay, so now as far as leveraging the project, we came up with several examples of ideas in our manuscript. And so I'll just briefly cover those here. And these are based on the idea, and I guess an exciting possibility for the network is that at least at this moment, we have buy-in with these topics and these themes from the scientists from all the sites. So each one of these topics could potentially become a platform for network-wide research and network-level activities where all sites are involved. So that's an exciting outcome for the network. So looking at this first strategy for sustainable intensification as a theme for cross-site research, as Pete mentioned, we have this kind of this amazing opportunity to really compare the effects of inputs under these two different paradigms of business as usual and aspirational production. So we can really learn more about how we might reduce our use of inputs or become more creative with our input use. Looking at that last strategy, we have the potential to compare ecosystem service flows under the two paradigms, and actually putting a monetary valuation on these or monetary value on these ecosystem services might really help getting our producers to be compensated adequately for those extra ecosystem services they might be producing as aspirational in their aspirational production systems. So looking at the barriers, again, we can all agree that these are important to know about if we want widespread adoption of our aspirational production systems. And one way to understand these better would probably extending those questionnaires beyond just the scientists and sharing them or asking our producers and stakeholders to fill them out, avoiding survey fatigue, of course. And then another idea that came through this project is this concept that most of the products in our aspirational production systems, I think we can all agree, could be perceived as natural or green or sustainable. But there are these barriers that can prevent producers from getting fair market value for them. So as Brandon explained, this lack of regional processing and marketing can be a hindrance in our region, and then that was also brought up for other regions as a concern for widespread adoption for aspirational production. So the network might want to consider exploring mechanisms for processing and marketing of these aspirational products. And so a couple ways we could go about this is doing some research about or with these entities that try to increase sustainability in the supply chain, so like Field to Market or the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. And then another thing we mentioned in the manuscript was the role of cooperatives if aspirational producers want to band together to pool resources, there might be the opportunity to increase profitability through economies of scale. And so I think another benefit of doing research on these on either the cooperatives or the supply chain entities would be understanding more about these social interactions, so how societal factors affect producers, because we could learn more about social networks and just kind of, it would just be an opportunity to work directly with producers as the network. Okay, and then, so I'm done. So so as I said before, this is a living project to adapt over time. So as agriculture evolves and the network evolves, this project can provide a framework for understanding the common experiment. So thank you. Sorry.
Agro-eco systems kind of covered here, but the societal aspect, you touched on that. Have you started engaging on any social researchers, social experts that might engage with this, be involved?
Yes, so that was recognized pretty early on, but the engagement so far has been minimal. So we've been inviting to meetings, and certainly I think when you get to local sites, so our group has a contact with some sociologists and some economists. The economists aren't really interested in like enterprise level accounting, which is kind of what we wanted to tackle right off the bat. They're interested more in kind of macro level assessment, which would get to your societal one. There is foreseen a need to learn to play with social scientists, but we're not there yet.
Other question?
And you said that only 3 of the 13 sites have field scale experimentation possibly occurring. So then how easy would that be then to plot scale extrapolate out to larger areas we're really talking about if you don't have any field scale sites?
And I'm saying that correctly. Right, the site specific. I think it's 11 of 13 have capacity to do field scale at this point.
Oh, I saw 3 yesterday, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, we can start replicating.
As I point out, almost all sites can have space for one needle of any treatment. So we get a total of them, and hopefully as we build on that, expand and be able to replicate.
Yes, that.
I'm a little concerned that California is not included in any of these sites.
We just put the logo right over that state usually when we make images. Yeah.
Yeah. So California actually is becoming a site. There were some pretty stringent criteria for joining the network initially. Involved demonstrating capacity to work on a network like this, having a long-term data set, and just recently some funding came through to establish a site in California. I think Charlie Walthall will be up here later, could speak a little bit more to that. It's something where those of us who are in the leadership and a part of the group, we've spent a while. So right now you're seeing reflections on really some of the first outputs from a network of people learning to work as a network, work deliberately, work in an adaptive fashion right here. And so as we add a new member, the desire is that they kind of, you know, get up to speed quickly, but also provide or meet the same expectations of the rest there. So California is certainly on the horizon, and they are funded, fully funded for that. But I think it'll probably take a couple of years before you see their full representation.
Thank you. Let's thank our speakers again.